Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. We're going to have a party cast later in the show where we're going to have people like do reviews and stuff like we usually do. But for now, I am being joined by a guest, Sam Brace, the man behind Decibel PR and musician extraordinaire. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you doing? It's nice to be on the show.
I'm doing wonderful. We've been chatting for a few years now. Between PR stuff and music stuff, and I'm thrilled to finally have you on the show. The first question is, who are you? The second question is, what brings you to SML?
Well, I guess you kind of summed it up a little bit. So, you know, over the last 25 years or so, I've been doing a lot of music with a band called Skinny Lister, who were relatively moderately well-known if you're into the Celtic rock scene and folk punk. So Skinny Lister have been on tour with the likes of Frank Turner and Dropkick Murphys and Floppy Molly over the years. You know, we've done sort of world tours. We've been to Japan. We've been to it's been a lot of fun. We've been to America multiple times. We did Warped Tour in 2012, which was incredible. And yeah, we were playing main stages for 12 weeks out there, 7 weeks. And yeah, it was it's been a lot of fun. And throughout that time, because it's notoriously difficult to actually live off being a touring musician, I've been doing video games PR, which is something I sort of got into straight out of college. And I did a degree in music technology, hoping to go straight into music, but I quickly found that I couldn't pay the bills. So a friend of mine asked me to go and I could say audition, but obviously you don't audition for a job. I had to interview for a job at this PR agency because they knew that I'd been playing a lot of video games at college as well as playing music. So and they were looking for someone who liked playing video games and liked drinking, and that's pretty much all I did at college. So went for the interview at this agency and got the job, and then from then on I was sort of in-house at the likes of I was a PR agency at first, working at Konami, and one of my first games was Metal Gear Solid 2, and Silent Hill 2. Although my very first game was Woody Woodpecker.
Nice.
From Codemasters, so that was fun. So I went over to Capcom for 6.5 years, working on like Resident Evil 4, Resident Evil Remake. We did the first Dead Rising, Devil May Cry 2. And just a bit of 4, like Akami and Killer 7 and all the sort of Clover titles that came through, Beautiful Joe and stuff. So that was a real golden period.
Those were beautiful days of Capcom. I miss the Beautiful Joe days.
Yeah, they don't make them like that anymore, sadly. But so that was cool. And then I went on to Bethesda and worked at Bethesda on Fallout 3 for a couple of years, doing the European PR director's job. So that was fun, and I was in Washington DC a lot with Pete Hines and Todd Howard and people like that. We were going around showing the game in its early form to people. Went to Australia for 5 days to show the game off at review stage, and all around Europe and stuff. So that was fun. Then I went to THQ doing WWE and a lot of fighting games. Went to WrestleMania in Atlanta the year The Rock came back, which was great.
You got to go to Mania?
Yeah.
Oh man, anyway. I am so jealous.
Yeah, it was fun.
Are you a big wrestling fan?
Not really, but I mean, I was when I was a kid, but not so much these days. But it was cool. We got to hang out with Randy Orton and people like that. And what was that? There was the Irish wrestler. I've forgotten his name now.
Famous?
I can't remember. Yeah, Famous. That's the one. How did you forget that? but yeah, I haven't watched it since then, really. So it's been good 10 years.
I watch it weekly. I am. I need my soaps. A man soap.
Well, it is very soapy. So yeah, that is a very accurate description of how it runs. But it was a lot of fun. And then I guess after THQ, that's when Warped Tour came up as well. So THQ then sort of went under when in about 2012. I left to go on Warped Tour. And then I just set up Decibel PR because I knew I couldn't continue in a full-time job while I was actually doing proper touring with Skinny Lister. So somehow I managed to make it work, and I could freelance PR while I was on tour in the likes of America, and I even did it in Japan as well, and just sort of everywhere really. So everyone's touring around the back of this bus, and it's just me on my computer with my sort of Wi-Fi dongle wherever we were in the world, trying to write press releases and you know, talk to the likes of you guys, you know, try and get press for whatever game we were working on. So and so Decibel's been going for about 8 years, maybe more than that. Well, 10 years. Yeah, 10 years. So yeah,
time flies when there's a pandemic, doesn't it? Like,
yeah, well,
all the years just blend together.
Yeah, that's right. But everyone coming and going. So yeah, it's been a fun time and an interesting life, I suppose. But yeah, I sort of left Skinny Lister now as well, and started doing my own stuff because of the pandemic. I set up. Well, a friend of mine got in contact with me out of the blue with some original ideas and said, have you thought about doing original stuff? And I thought, yeah, you know what, I have. And we took some of those ideas and turned them into a song, which was the first song from the album called Panic. And I was like, oh, that actually did pretty good, because I wasn't sure it was going to come out. And I was sort of enthused to carry on and see what else we could do. And we came up with a whole album of material, which we then put out last June. It's nearly a year old already. Fever and Bones. So, but that was an amazing process, and it sort of gave me the motivation to sort of try and do it on my own rather than touring with Skinny. Because I feel like after 13 years, it's been amazing, but I feel like I just need to go and try and do my own thing. I've always, in the back of my mind, I've always been thinking I'd really love to just do some solo stuff. So I finally got a chance to do it, and I even did a little tour in America in February this year with the Homeless Gospel Choir and some chaps called Cuckoo Kangaroo, which was a tour set up by a friend of mine called Scott Keys. And we did like 8 shows from San Francisco down to Austin, Texas. So that was pretty awesome. And then hopefully we'll do some more.
Let me know if you're coming to the East Coast, US. If you're ever in my neck of the woods, I'll have to check you out and enjoy you in person.
That's it. Well, at the moment, I've just been doing solo stuff, but I mean, the album itself is a full band sound, so I'm trying to put together a band right now to sort of bring those songs to life, because although it's great fun to do on my own, it just doesn't, I always feel like I'm sort of underselling myself, because it should be a bigger sound. So, you know, we'll see what we can do, and maybe I'll have a band to bring to the East Coast next year. I'm lucky.
That'd be pretty awesome. I've been checking out the album. I've been listening to it on Spotify and on Bandcamp. I need to buy a CD, so one of these days I'm going to have to buy a CD off you. It's really good stuff. It's like, I'm normally into heavier stuff, but it's just a really solid rock album, and I really enjoy it. It's really good. Also, what I enjoy is Victor dropping a sub in chat. Pat, thank you so much for dropping a sub. Love having you here, just as much as I love having Sam here. See, I told you we're live.
Yeah, about that. That's cool.
So tell us about the album. Like, you wanted to do something on your own. How is this different from what you've done with Skinny?
Well, it's an interesting one. Really. I mean, the album is very different to anything Skinny Lister have ever done. But my sort of angle in Skinny Lister is to try and make that band as rock and roll as possible, or as rock sounding as possible. And hopefully you'll hear that in some of the guitar lines that are in some of the songs on the albums. But I've always wanted to do something a bit more rock, a bit more what I would listen to myself. So although I love folk music and I love all kinds of music, but within me, I feel like I wanted a bit more overdrive and proper, you know, super rockness. So I've sort of gone down that road and got very excited about doing it on my own, and sort of just, I don't know, I feel like I've put everything in there. All my ideas I had have sort of gone in there, and I think you know, what you see is Fever and Bones, and it was just such a sort of liberating feeling to be able to to do my own thing and work. Like, I worked very closely with my friend Adam Tarry, who's one of my oldest friends, in fact, and he's done a lot of the lyrical work on the album. And you know, we've worked closely to generate all those songs together. So I can't emphasize how important it has been to have him along for the ride. So yeah, it's been great. And you know, I hope that a Skinny Lister fan would appreciate songs, but I think it is super different to the folky stuff. So you know,
now, I never listened to too much Skinny Lister. It was a band that I never really heard of before I met you. But Geordi Ladd was awesome. I appreciate that a couple of years ago you allowed us to add sleigh bells to the song and make it a Christmas song.
Geordi Ladd.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Jingle Ladd, I believe we called it.
Jingle Ladd. Oh yeah, there you go. I remember.
Yeah. Yeah, we're those idiots.
That's cool. Actually, I'm on about that. The guy who produced that record has just had a number one record in the UK with the Lottery Winners. I don't know if you know, heard of those guys, but they've been touring with Frank Turner as well. And the producer called Tristan Ivamy, and you know, he's produced Frank Turner records before as well. But yeah, he's just got his first UK number one with the Lottery Winners, so that's pretty cool. So that was from the the record he produced for us was The Devil at the Heart of the Fight with Geordi Ladd and Tragedy A Minor and some other staples in the life set that come from that album. Yeah, it's a good one.
So what are some of the standouts from Fever and Bones? What are some of your favorite tracks that you've put on there?
I guess that's a good question. I think probably my favorite track is probably Ultraviolet, I think. I think that's sort of like is the most epic sounding one on there. It's kind of slow, but it really hits hard. And I love sort of the bendy guitars that are on there. It's kind of almost like a nod to Radiohead-y a bit, but not quite. And I don't know, there's a lot of sort of flavors in there, but it really, really ticks all my boxes, that one. So it's that's at the top of my list. But there are some that are easier to play solo than others, and I think they sort of stay with me as the better tracks from the album as well. So songs like Brave sticks along nicely, and Panic Grey. And some of the songs are more of an adventure than others. So actually trying to make it work, because we recorded it in a pandemic, so we couldn't get together and record it all together. So I had to get, the live drums were recorded by Tom Mills, who's the drummer for Skinny Lister. He did it all in his garden studio in Brighton while I was at first in London and then in Greece for the second half of it. So I was getting people to send demos to me remotely, and then I was mixing it together. And then I had a producer as well called Ed Ripley, who also worked on The Devil Heart Fight. In fact, he was Tristan Ivamy's assistant on that album. And then he helped me produce Fever and Bones to make it sort of as professional as we could make it sound for release. But yeah, so I guess Ultraviolet. So when Tom was sending me stuff and all the bits were coming together, there were some songs which were really, really difficult to then make work, because if you don't record together, it's hard to make things sound as if they were recorded in the same room. I think we did a pretty good job, but there's a song called Fine Adjustments, which took me like, I don't know, 6 weeks to stitch together. It was so difficult, but I don't know why, but I was just so determined to do it, because I really believed in the song, and that is one of my favorites as well. It's sort of more it's a real sort of journey song, and it goes to many different places, and there's a few different influences in there and different players. So it's like one of my mates from Greece, another mate from Brighton called Toby on bass, and Tom playing the drums. So yes,
that's really cool.
It was a lot of fun putting together. So and hopefully we'll, you know, with the next one, we've got like six songs finished pretty much. But I would love to do it. I'd love to get the finished songs all done in the same room with a proper band. But whether that happens or not, I'm not sure yet. We'll have to see how we go. I'm taking my time with it as well. So I don't want to just rush another album out. I want to see what comes to me and what feels right. And
that's fair.
Yeah.
Bands just crank out albums like there's no tomorrow, and there's nothing memorable on them.
Well, that's it. Yeah. Yeah. I think a few bands are guilty of that. Not in name names, but it can be a bit boring if you ask me. So I don't know. I don't want to just, this is the thing, I don't want to crank out another album that sounds exactly the same as Fever and Bones. So I'm trying to take some time to sort of develop what we're trying to achieve and maybe just tweak it a little bit so it's not exactly the same. And, you know, it'll have different elements. So, yeah, excited to see what happens.
Very cool. Very cool. Let's jump back to PR a bit. What are you working on these days? What kind of games are you promoting and showing off and trying to bring some attention to?
So the biggest publisher I've been working with over the last 5-6 years has been a publisher called Marvelous Europe, and they are like a Japanese, well, they're the European branch of the Japanese publisher Marvelous Inc. And they do games like Story of Seasons and Ring Factory. So there's a little sort of farm simulation, and it's sort of like quite almost Japanese RPG, I guess, elements to those games. So we've been working on what's the last thing that came out? We had Loop 8 and Trinity Sugar, which is like a 90s flavored JRPG, Trinity Sugar, and that's going down quite well. And Loop 8's next, and we just had the Marvelous Showcase 2023, which they've announced some brand new Rune Factory games and some new sort of season games, and they've got a bunch of other things coming through. So that was kind of fun to sort of amplify that. We sort of went the night after Sony did their conference or their showcase, and obviously it's a much more low-key affair, but it felt like a lot of people were, you know, I saw a lot of positive reactions saying, oh, this conference is way better than Sony's noise.
What did you think of Sony's conference? As a PR guy, what did you think? Do you think they hit the mark this year, or do you think they kind of fell flat?
I think it was kind of boring, and the most exciting thing for me was the Queen package for Beat Saber, so which I immediately bought for my Oculus.
Very nice.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm a PlayStation guy, to be honest. I'm a much more PlayStation fan than Xbox. And
boo, we're Xbox fans. Boo. No.
Oh no. I know. I sort of changed allegiance a couple of times. So 360 days, I was definitely an Xbox fan, and then it sort of changed with Xbox One. I don't know.
Yeah, they PlayStation 4 is just where it's at.
yeah, it's just, it wasn't cool. And I love my PlayStation 4. I don't have PlayStation 5 yet, so I really want to wait for a PlayStation 5 Pro. I just think it's so ugly. I really hate the look of it. So
I'm
hating
system
on PlayStation, but it's just awful.
I have to store mine behind my TV because there's no room in front of it. Like,
fair enough.
The shelves on my entertainment stand aren't big enough to hold the PS5. It's just such a massive beast of a system.
Yeah, I think it's just so ugly and it's too big. So I'm going to wait. But I nearly caved. I nearly caved for Burning Shores because I absolutely love Horizon. So and I've finished Forbidden West on PS4, which is probably a shame, but I was going to wait till I got PS5, but I just couldn't wait, and I played it through, loved it, and I'm really, really excited about Burning Shores, but I'm going to wait until there is a pro version, I think, so even if it's next year, I'm going to hold on. I'm playing Zelda now anyway, so I'm sort of distracted.
What do you think of it?
I love it, yeah, it's been great. Dived into a Zelda hole for the last week, and that's all I've been doing.
Sounds like half of my staff is just buried in Zelda.
I think half the world's doing it. Yeah,
hey, do you want to review a game? No, Zelda.
I still have at least 160 hours to go. Yeah, that's it. That's been fun. I guess it's a shame there's no E3 this year, because I've been to E3 about 7 or 8 times, I guess, over the years. Shame not to come to LA, but we're sort of looking forward to games coming out. So there's a lot of planning going towards Cologne and what Marvelous will be showing in Germany. So looking forward to that. Going to see some old friends, and I've got dinner lined up with my old Capcom pals. So a lot of my old Capcom contacts are still there. In fact, there was a German PR manager who was on the same level as me when I was UK PR manager, and now he sort of runs the whole company. So he's the boss of Capcom Germany, and he's responsible for all of the continent, really. But we're still sort of best mates, so
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's weird. I never would have expected that to happen, but he's done well.
Nice promotion. It's cool to see your friend succeed. Like one of my good friends I've known for about 20 years now is Jake Kaufman, who does soundtracks for like Shantae and Shovel Knight. Yeah, it's cool to see where your friends end up. Another good friend of mine, Dale North, who did Wizard of Legend. Just a lot of talented composer friends that have been making it in the video game industry, and it's cool to see.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. It's a great industry to be in, to be honest. I think, you know, I feel like I've been quite spoiled in the fact that I've done both of my sort of loves, I suppose. I've been passionate about music my whole life, and then been playing video games since I was like 9 years old. My dad bought a BBC Micro computer, and you know, we're playing all kinds of crazy tiny games. I remember playing a game called Daredevil Dennis with him, and you know, those sort of early Chucky Egg type games with a floppy disk, and they were massive floppy disks, 3.5-inch floppy disks, and you know, it's been a long road, but I feel like I've been super lucky to see both of them, you know, to this stage, and excited to see what happens next as well, I suppose.
Especially doing your own PR company for over a decade now.
I feel kind of lucky doing that. But yeah, I guess one of the reasons for that is that because I had worked so extensively at in-house publishers, so I sort of knew a lot of people. And because of that, I never really had to look for work. Everyone was just always ringing me up saying, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And, you know, I feel very privileged and lucky to have been able to be in that position. So, you know, I couldn't have done it if it hadn't been for those first 10 years in-house and meeting people and going to, you know, E3 seven or eight times, or Gamescom every year, and, you know, all the launch parties and stuff. And a lot of the time I used to say, but because I was in bands before Skinny Lister as well, but the PR was way more rock and roll than the bands back in the day. Not anymore, because you can't do stuff like that anymore. Like, people will get accused of bribery and all that terrible stuff. But back in the day, you know, we used to go to Las Vegas for a week and take a lady journalist and, you know, show him Resident Evil 4 and show him a good time. And it was perfectly acceptable, obviously. I don't want to say anything that's going to get me in trouble. But
it's okay. No one listens.
It was a lot of fun. Fine. Yeah. Yeah. We had a good old time.
I would love to get to go to an E3 or even like a PAX Prime. I'm stuck on the East Coast, so I don't really get to go to anything like that. The big thing I get to go to every year is a convention called MAGFest. Have you heard of that one?
That rings a bell, but I'm not sure. Isn't there a PAX East? I thought there was a PAX East.
There is a PAX East, but it's just too expensive for me. I can't. And I'm still like a 10-hour drive. I'm a big guy, so I don't fly.
Where are you based?
I'm in Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, okay. So you know, you must know the Homeless Gospel Choir. They're based. I think that's where Derek is from, the lead singer.
I'm not familiar with them.
You gotta check them out. They're awesome. Great punk band.
Nice. I will definitely have to. If our friend Carnage was in chat, he loves punk and ska. I'm sure he'd be all over that.
I love it. They have a song called what is it? What's it called? But it mentions Pennsylvania. It's about use my language.
Oh, that's fine.
I'll remember it in a minute. It'll come to my brain. It'll come into my brain. I could sing it. I know the tune. I just can't remember. I think Seasonal Depression it's called. Yeah.
Oh, we're all familiar with Seasonal Depression.
Yeah. It's a wonderful track. You should definitely check it out. They are such a great band.
Yeah, definitely shoot me a link to that band. I want to check them out if they're from Pennsylvania. I love checking out the home bands. The two big bands from my hometown area are Breaking Benjamin and Motionless in White.
Oh yeah, I know the names. I'm not familiar with the music so much, but Motionless in White. Did you say
yes?
I think they may have been on Warped Tour.
Probably. I think they've done Warped Tour before.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they were. That's great.
Yeah. Awesome. But I would love to get to like an E3 or something like that and just get more involved with the gaming industry and meet more people. It is my favorite part of doing this podcast for the past 10 years is doing interviews and talking to people like you that I normally wouldn't have had the opportunity to chat with. And it's just the best part of what I do is meeting new people, and I would love to do that more.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what E3 was, you know, just like, because the industry is quite small, although it's massive now, but the sort of inner circle of people who work in publishing and sort of PRs and stuff will pretty much remain very similar. So some of my friends are still, you know, now the head of Future Publishing or PC Gamer, you know, those massive sort of brands are now online rather than magazines. And, you know, even people in publishing houses are, you know, they may have moved publisher, but they're still there. We're all getting old together. But yeah, it's a wonderful time, and everyone, it's great to see everyone whenever there's an event and catch up. So yeah, you should do it if you can. If E3 ever comes back, I'm not sure if it's going to happen.
Yeah, if it comes back, that's the question.
Yeah, we'll have to see about that.
I just got to get over to California one of these days and...
Yeah, get over to the convention center and downtown. It gets pretty busy down there. It's absolutely packed, the only thing. And get pretty stressful on the older on the brain. But it's good. Good times.
So you mentioned you're playing Zelda. What other games are you playing these days? What are you enjoying in your spare time?
Well, I mean, it probably sounds like I'm playing loads of this stuff, but I don't actually play that much. It's just, I only play things that I really, really want to, because I feel like I've played all the games in all the universe, and I only like to play things that really catch my attention, or like something, some sort of like something that's a bit different. So like, I won't ever play Call of Duty. I won't ever play Grand Theft Auto. I'm never going to play FIFA anymore. I just don't. I'm not interested. It has to be something that is slightly different or new, or have some sort of angle to it that is that appeals to me in some way. So, you know, I can go 6 months without playing anything, and then I'll sit down and play. Like Monster Hunter Iceborne, for example, which I got into massively for 2 years straight. Something like that. So, you know, what else am I playing? Mostly Horizon, I guess, was the game I played before Zelda. I really love The Last of Us as well. That's been interesting to see the show as well as...
show was fantastic.
Yeah, it was really cool.
That was a really good show.
One of the first times I've ever got a video game conversion correct, have done it well, you know. So I'm really excited to see where they go with it next, and hopefully there'll be a new game to talk about soon as well, with any luck. That's what I was kind of hoping for with the PlayStation showcase, is some sort of first party thing.
But, I know, I mean I loved what they showed off at the show, but yeah. So much of it was multi-platform, and mm-hmm. I usually watch those shows to see exclusives and stuff that's only going to be there. And it just felt like somewhat of a missed opportunity on Sony's behalf to just really put the nail in the coffin.
Yeah, they must have a plan, basically. I'm pretty sure that it will be a calculation, and they've saved stuff for different things. I'm sure there's more to come. It just maybe wasn't quite ready to show, or they just weren't. I don't know. I guess we'll see. But I also really want to see some more stuff like... The Last Guardian is one of my favorites, and like Shadow of the Colossus, you know, that the icos of this world. I would love to see a bit more of that, but I don't know what Ada is working on or what's happening. So we'll see.
Hopefully find out more over the summer. We have the whole Summer Games Showcase or Summer Game Fest, whatever
that's
the hell
right.
Keely calls it. So
exactly.
We'll have more announcements all through the summer. So are we going to have more announcements from Decibel over the summer? Anything new or special in the works?
Well, it's interesting because Marvelous have sort of announced quite a lot of stuff very, very early. So I don't think anything more from them. But, you know, we'll be working on Story of Seasons, Wonderful Life and Room Factory 3 Special. So they'll be coming up over the summer. And so that should be fun to work on. We've got a couple of great indie games as well. There's a game called Ninja or Die, which is been produced by a one-man developer in Tokyo. He's a force of nature. I just can't believe he's done this thing. He seems to work 24/7 and doesn't sleep. You know, he's like, sends new builds through every week. And it's like, oh my God, how much? Like, he's just done so much to the game. So he's incredible. Mr. Now, we call him Nowton, I think it is. Yeah, so that's going to be really cool to see. I think it's coming in basically scheduled for summer, so we'll see how that goes. And there's a bunch of other stuff that's coming too, so we'll have things to talk about. It's going to be good.
Nice. I like when you work on indie games and stuff that's not just Europe based, because then I could actually like apply for those. I feel bad when
I
get the marvelous emails. I'm like, oh man, Loop 8 looks amazing.
Yeah.
Nope, European only.
That's it. Well, you could, if you talk to the XE guys over in California, they should be able to hook you up.
So. Yeah, the one PR team in America is really good at helping us out and getting us taken care of. So awesome. They're good people too.
Yeah, really nice guys. I really like working with them. We've worked on some other stuff as well. We did a campaign together with D3P a couple of years ago. That was cool. And nice guys.
Very cool. Very, very cool. So what are you going to be doing this summer? Do you have any fun plans?
Well, yes. Another thing that happened was just after we started working on the album, I moved to Greece. So my other half, Eva, is Greek. And we've been together for nearly 12 years. And every year we go to Greece for some holidays. And we always say, oh, my God, it would be amazing if we could move to Greece. Without really ever thinking that it was ever going to happen. But then when the pandemic came, an opportunity arose that we thought, you know what, let's get out of London and move to Greece for a few months and see how it goes. You know, we can wait it out for 3 months and then come back. And then 3 years later, we're still there. So it's been amazing. I really enjoyed living in Thessaloniki. And I was lucky. I managed to get a 5-year residency for Greece just before the Brexit rules came in. So because the madness of Brexit happened here over the last couple of years, and not many people could do what I've done if they applied to do it after December 2020. So I was quite lucky with that, and I'm able to stay there for as long as I like pretty much now, which is awesome. And
very nice.
So yeah, I'm going to be going to the beach and sitting in Helsinki every weekend, as well as coming up with new ideas for songs. And I share a studio down there with a friend of mine called Vasilis, and I'll be in and out of the studio weeknights to start laying down some ideas. And then, it'll be a creative and hopefully fun summer.
Nice. Well, I'm looking forward to whatever music you work on next. When do you think a new album's going to come out? Like next year, do you think? Maybe later this year?
I don't think it's going to be this year. I think it'll be, I'd have to write.
I don't know how long the recording process takes. I'm used to, like, I have friends who do 1-hour compos where they just whip up a song in an hour. So I don't know how long the professional, like, mastering, the recording, and all that stuff takes. I'm sure that takes longer than an hour.
Yeah, it really depends. I mean, some people work fast, and you can. I mean, with the advances in technology and home studios and all that stuff, you can do it pretty quick these days. But I feel like, you know, to really create an album of 12 things, 14 songs, I can't do that in, you know, I'm going to need, I like to think of like a month of song would be great if I'm doing one at a time sort of thing. But, you know, generally I'll work on a couple at the same time. And then it depends on how we're going to record them. So if we are going to go into a room or just use the room in Thessaloniki and get some musicians together, or if I'm just going to do it all again pretty much and just sort of work around the drums and tom. And I haven't made those decisions yet. So we'll see how that comes together over the summer. And then I think it'll probably be next year towards the autumn, I imagine. Give me loads of time to finish it nicely and get it all ready, I suppose.
Think you'll trickle out any like one-off singles or covers or anything fun?
Yeah, I've been really slack since the tour. I've not done very much at all online, so I've sort of had a bit of a breather. But I'm definitely going to get back on. I've got a bunch of ideas for some covers to pop on YouTube. And like I said, we've got 6 songs kind of done. So it might be that I do an EP in between, or I'm not sure yet. I'm still sort of thinking around how it's going to look. But whatever, I'm excited to get. I really want to get some new stuff out pretty quick. But my writing partner, Adam, has got bored with me taking my time, and he's released some of his own stuff as well now. So if you should look up Adam Tarry, it sounds kind of similar to what we've been doing. So but next year hopefully we'll see how it goes.
Well, you should do the 6 songs that you have and then a bunch of club remixes.
that sounds like an idea. We could certainly look into it.
Put out the remix album.
That's right.
Guest spots on there.
Yeah, why not? I'm open to anything.
Awesome. Oh, man. Well, I know we've been chatting for a while. Is there anything you wanted to talk about that I didn't bring up?
Not really. I think we covered a whole swathe of things there. So I hope it was interesting to people. And maybe we'll do it again once I've got something new to show and, can have another chat.
Oh, absolutely. Would love to have you back on. I guess we can wrap this up for now. Everyone, stick around. We're going to take a quick break. We are going to listen to a track from Sam off of his album, and we'll play a few more songs at the end of the show, so stick around for that. Sam, do you have any requests on what songs we should play on the show?
It sounds like Skinny Lister, we've got a brand new singer coming out next week, so I think you should definitely play that. I haven't actually heard it yet, but I assume it's going to be very good. And what else did you play? Well, you could maybe play one of our tunes if you like to have a listen to that, and yeah, see what you reckon.
I just meant like which songs off your album do you think we should play?
Oh, my album. Yeah, oh yeah. Well,
screw other bands. We're playing your stuff. We're listening to just you. This is your episode.
Fair enough. I would go for Brave and maybe Ultraviolet. Panic is pretty accessible, and I'd say, you know, three's probably enough. But if you wanted to go for a deep dive, I'd get Fine Adjustments as well.
Nice. I was eyeing up Year of Punk. I like that one.
Oh, Year of Punk as well. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, yeah. That's kind of a lot of people said that sounds a bit Morrissey, so I kind of take that one. And it's a great compliment. So yeah, play that one. That's a good one.
Cool. So where can people keep up to date with you and what you're doing?
So if you just Google Sam Brace, luckily there's not many of them, and you'll find me on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, everywhere really. So, you know, there's Spotify and iTunes and all the usual places you'll find us. So, yeah, I'm going to start getting on the socials again soon and posting new content. And yeah, want to get some more David Bowie covers going on.
Ooh, Bowie covers. That'll be good.
Yeah. Yeah, we did an Ashes to Ashes cover, just like me and an acoustic. It seems to have done quite well in terms of reaction. So I'm thinking about doing Golden Years and maybe one or two others. Yeah,
I gotta check out your YouTube and find these covers. They sound good.
Yeah, see what you reckon. Let me know what you think.
Will do. But again, thank you so much for coming on, hanging out with us. Again, one more time, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more show. Sam, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us. Yeah. Do you have any final words to end the interview?
Oh, it's been a pleasure. You know, just thanks for having me. And yeah, looking forward to coming on again maybe sometime in the future. And we've got some new songs to show.
Been made cold.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another huge thanks to Sam Brace for coming on and chatting with me about PR and about games and about all that fun jazz. Go check out his music. We'll be playing more songs at the end of the show. But for now, we have a party cast going on. Chris is here, Purnell's here, Brooke's here, and Aki's here. How's everyone doing?
We're all sleepy.
I built a bunch of Gunpla last week, even though I didn't have the time to do it. I still managed it, and I'm happy.
Very okay. Cool.
Who else?
That's badass.
Well, I'm exhausted.
Who else did exhausted. Stuff over the past week?
Nothing here. It's been taking care of Catherine. She is stricken.
Oh, no.
Oh, she's happened? Sick, too?
Yeah.
Man, everybody's getting sick.
What is it? It's like sick count 2000.
Sleeping on the floor, all that stuff.
Is it COVID sick or just sick, mm-hmm. sicky, sick?
No, COVID Jesus. Sick.
That blows.
Yeah, it turns out that disease is going around. I don't know.
Really? I haven't heard of it.
It's one of those things where... It's one of those things like...
A lot of people on Twitter assured me that there was nothing to worry about, but... I don't know.
For me, personally, it's not even about it. Like, I'm not one of those people that was like, oh, yeah, it's gone now, see? But at the same time...
I'm beginning to doubt the perspicacious nature of Twitter.
Christ.
The who's a but what's it?
No comment.
He's losing his perspicacity.
Perspiration something.
Yeah. Okay, that I understand. Okay.
Yeah. So, Chris, are you back on Twitter? I was able to tag you before the show.
Yeah, apparently.
Yes.
For now.
Yay. Congrats.
What did you
One
do?
One person got their account back.
Is mine back? I haven't checked. I don't check it.
Apparently, I was wrapped up in a bug that was going around where people were getting banned permanently for evading banning. They were evading suspension, which I should assume that we're all doing on Twitter. We're not trying to get suspended from it. But
debatable.
It's one of those things where it's like if a cop shoots you, then they have to report that you were resisting arrest.
Yeah.
Oh, crickets.
Yeah. Oh, wait. We need that, don't we?
Yeah, we need.
Yeah, I'm playing a game.
Too real. No, that's good.
Yeah, there we go.
There you go.
I'm just happy I added my cat.
Kitty. Anyway, yeah. So it was all a big mistake because I wasn't actively evading suspension. If anything, my dialogue tends to lean into the opposite of whatever the people who own own Twitter tend to think about. So,
I don't think the person who owns Twitter thinks. That would require brain cells.
Got him.
It's not like he'll ever hear it, and even if he does, he wouldn't understand. It's fine.
Well,
so Pernell, how was your weekend?
Right till I start eating broccoli, then you ask me.
Yep.
Well, it was fine. I went to 3 barbecues. I'm sleepy. I didn't get to work out all weekend, which is ridiculous. So I work out today. I haven't slept enough. I am drowning in lack of sleep, and I'm applying for tons of jobs. Everything else in my life is suffering. Every goddamn day, because broccoli's the shit. It's the shit. Hey,
broccoli's awesome.
Yeah.
You ain't lying. See, Joe and I agree. You're out of the loop here on this one. Go Brooke, eat
broccoli,
whatever
yay or
you
nay.
Like.
I'm a pro broccoli. Love broccoli. That's also the name that I went by at Starseeds Cafe in the kitchen for 8 years in Austin, Texas. The kitchen guy was like, yo, what's your name? And I was like, there's a language barrier. And I was like, Brooke. And he's like, Brock. I was like, Brooke. He's like, Brock. And the guy's like, it's like broccoli, dude. He's like, oh, broccoli. And I was like, yeah, exactly. And they called me broccoli for 8 years. So, yeah,
broccoli is the awesome, best thing I've
ever heard.
She's like, now I like broccoli.
I know, I still hate broccoli.
I love
broccoli.
I like broccoli.
Oh, man. Kitties, guys, thank you so much for the raid. We got a bunch of people coming in. Hello, everybody.
Hey.
We are just about to dive into some reviews. We got a handful of games to talk about tonight. Is everyone ready to start talking games?
I'm still talking broccoli. Sure.
Okay, Purnell, do you want to keep talking broccoli?
We can continue to talk broccoli because our next game is called... No, just gambling.
Go for it.
Our next game is called Monster... Monster
okay,
menu.
First game to talk about.
Wow, what's up?
You can't give Brooke impromptu stuff. That doesn't
I'm
work
sorry,
well.
You really can't.
The segues are harder to maneuver than they look.
They don't have a good turning radius, but yeah, first
speaking
game
broccoli,
to talk
there's
about.
There's no broccoli in this.
Oh my God, first game to talk about. Shut up, Aki. First game to talk about tonight is called Monster Menu, the Scavenger's Cookbook, developed by Nipponichi Software, published by NIS America, released May 23rd on Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $49.99. Tighten your pack and loosen your belt before digging into this dungeon-crawling adventure. Monster Menu, the Scavenger's Cookbook, spices up the classic SRPG formula with deliciously fun cooking-based mechanics. Indulge in detailed character creation for your party, gather resources, ingredients, and items while exploring, and fight monsters in tactical combat. Brooke, tell us about your time with Monster Menu, the Scavenger's Cookbook.
Yo, what up? I'm Brooke Poole. I have COVID right now. Stay in school, kids. Stay in school, because that's where you get COVID. This game is crazy. This game is like a dungeon crawler, survival-esque, technically cooking game. It's really exploration, customization, turn-based combat heavy. So, didn't know what to think of going into this game, but I do love cooking games. And I love my silly and slightly fanservice-y anime games. So, this is something I definitely wanted to try. Even though it features one of my... A little bit. Even though it features one of my arch nemesis of my own brain, tactical combat on a grid. So let's see how I did with this one. Well, as soon as you load this puppy up on the Switch, we can tell this is a nice expensive game with some very fancy and sharp assets, beautiful UI. We can tell we're about to get into some high anime bullshit, which I love. And when we hit start new game, we're prompted to make a character, which we can of course name, but also customize in way too many anime ways. Like, the customization is lit. We pick one of the prefab characters. There's some dudes in androgynous folk in there too, but the majority appear to be sexy anime ladies of different walks of life, and ain't nobody complaining about that. Isn't that right, Aki and Brooke?
That is correct.
That's right. Once we pick one, we can customize our skin color, hair color, eye color. We can give our character heterochromia if we want. We can change clothes, ooh, accessory colors, accessories themselves. We can change, like, what our portrait's crop looks like after customization for mini stat screen, menu screen, line of vision. This is pretty crazy. We can change the voice. We can change the personality. There's a little personality thing you can flip through, which I don't know entirely what that means yet, TBH. Facial expression we can change in a lot of different ways. Haircut. Different parts of the haircut. Height. Long story short, sometimes we get a character creation screen that suggests we start with our choice of a few editable prefab characters. Especially when they're anime characters, you know, sometimes we assume we're choosing from a lineup because there aren't a ton of customization choices, but nope. This is one of those games where they start us like this because there's so many choices, they just don't want us to go get overwhelmed starting from scratch, in my opinion. And they do have some bomb character-based design ideas in here. Awesome art direction. Everybody looks great. This is a story about everybody. This is a story about me, Moira, which is a name that I let them pick for me. So I could change it to wherever else I wanted, but I stuck with the one that they gave me so I could see if they were going to voice it later. Because, you know, sometimes when we stay with the base name in an anime game, it'll be voiced. So I'm Moira. I'm alive, but barely. I have 1 HP and my health bar is flashing red. It's an emergency. The screen also lets me know I'm starving to death and I'm seriously dehydrated. These observations appear to be linked to two different stats, but we can't do anything about that right now. So now we're walking around a dungeon. It's got basically an explorable grid for us to wander around, and we can go any direction we want, and we can change the view with the right stick to check out our stunning surroundings as we walk, all the good stuff. So no matter what we're doing, we can look in front of us, behind us, around us, from whatever angle we want. We can always see our character, so we can look at our amazing anime rack or butt at any time from almost whatever angle we want, which is nice, and the game is definitely designed to where we can enjoy that. By the way, character design-wise, this ain't a kid's game, though it's not, like, inappropriate. So it wouldn't be, like, crazy for a young teen to play, but yeah, it's very, very anime in here. We're not fighting yet, but there are some monster corpses around. As we explore, the tutorial lets us know that as we encounter these, we can press A to scavenge, which gives us supplies. We can't do anything else, and the stuff we're scavenging is, like, piece of hay, piece of cloth. There's kind of a fog of war going on, where we can't see too far in front of ourselves without exploring it. And there's lots of weird little twists and turns everywhere, like every good dungeon should have, beginner or not. We can run instead of walk. It does deplete a stamina bar to do so pretty quickly. After wandering around a lot, and I did get lost in the tutorial dungeon, because of course I did. Y'all know me. That's what I do. Mm-hmm. But in this case, that's a good sign. That means that the exploration in this game isn't super linear, obvious, or phoned in. Even though, you know, it's also kind of me. After wandering around a lot, we come across a giant deceased bug monster. And he's looking pretty gross. This starts a cinematic. We walk up to it, and we press A to scavenge, and the screen says, "You're currently famished. Eat the corpse's flesh." And we can select yes or no. Fun fact, if you select no over and over again, the game continues to warn you you're going to die if you keep saying no, but it still gives you the freedom to do so. Say no enough times, it's like, cool, okay, you're dead, and you watch your character fall over and the credits roll. So I really appreciated that. But anyway, then I restarted the game, got to the same point I was at before, which didn't take super long, and I said, yes, I'll eat this nasty old corpse. Now we get to enjoy a cinematic of our character eating a piece of bug arm and being like, ugh, super grossed out she has to do this, but she's doing it anyways, it's life or death. The corpse is actually rotting, and there are flies hanging around, and our character throws up. Suddenly, you've fallen unconscious. You wake up, and you're not where you passed out. It's a different dungeon, and you're at an old campfire. Seems someone's been camping here, but a very long time ago by the looks of things. Lots of broken items are tossed around, and you guessed it, this is our new base. You decide to use the camp as a base while you now try to find your way out of this new dungeon. And boom, now we can check our inventory, equipment, do lots of stuff. There's a new recipe book. Ooh, it's called The Monster Menu. Spoiler alert. Some equipment that we suddenly are notified that we have are entitled as follows. Busted frying pan. Leaky pot, and it actually has a giant hole in it. Big leaf. I think this is supposed to be a plate. Mystery tool. Checking the cooking screen to select recipes, we see we can make stuff like dirt poor dish, bug kebab, stir-fry bugs, raw veggies, ugh, gross, dead guy stir-fry, etc. That was for you, Joe. These dishes sound gross, and when they are gross, like when it's actually a gross dish like stir-fry bugs, they look gross. Not all dishes are gross, but a lot are. They actually get so gross that there's an option in the menu to censor what they look like and like blur it out. But ultimately, it's just like cartoons of bugs and tentacles and gore and gross stuff. So I don't think most people are going to toggle this off, but gotta mention it because I think it's neat. There's actually, there's also, as always, a crap load of stuff to do in each of the many menus. So we'll stop there for now and we'll select the option to depart to go into the new dungeon we woke up in. So we can keep talking about our exploration and combat. Exploration is like it was in the tutorial, except now we need to keep an eye on HP, calories, and hydration. We need to keep our eye on these three stats as we explore, just like in real life. And I think that there's one difficulty where these stats don't steadily go down a little even when you're resting. You're not resting when you're battling. And a battle begins when you get close enough to a monster that you make contact with them on the grid that is the world. As you're battling and exploring around, your objective is to look for stairs. This is a little like Persona in that your objective is basically explore, 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 find cool items, get into trouble, find the stairs, go up a floor, down a floor, find enough stairs till you get to the boss, who then, you know, maybe you eat in its entirety, just like in Persona. That was a little test to see if Pernell is listening, which, you know, isn't really fair because it's not going to hurt my feelings if it's not. But I always try to work Persona into every review as much as I can, especially if it's not a good fit for the game and it's not like Persona at all. And when I think of Persona, I think of Pernell. But yeah, when the battle begins, he's just eating his broccoli over there. Folks, if you're just tuning in, Pernell's eating a bunch of broccoli right now. It's pretty cool. But yeah, when the so good. But yeah, when the battle begins, we're on a grid. So it matters from what side you attack them on, whether they're sluggish because it's daytime in the game, or because it's nighttime because they're monsters, all sorts of stuff at play here. But the actual attacking is pretty simple, especially when the game starts out. This is turn-based, and you press A to attack. You're not really like picking your type of attack, especially not now. It's just a basic attack at first, which can be affected by like the equipment you're using. You can choose between attack, defend, a few different options, skill. You can choose to use a special attack or move or something if you have one. We have one in the beginning here. It's cross slash. You can also use skills inadvertently by eating a special meal that gives you a skill by selecting devour or item and then eating the item. We've also got escape, standby. You're mostly just going to attack your few fights and just get used to the grid, which you can always like zoom around and look at from different angles, which is cool. After you do, you can press A to scavenge again. And now we're starting to get stuff like eyeball. and weird, gross arm. And strangely, your character has gone from being like, ew, a corpse, I don't want to eat this, to like immediately pulling an eyeball out of a bat she just killed. She's like, haha, nice, an eyeball. Or could this be an eyeball? Delicious.
You want to know what else is nice?
What is
a
nice?
A raid. We just got a raid from Dopey of 29 poor people who are now watching our show. We're talking about Monster's Menu, or Monster Menu, the Scavenger's Cookbook from NIS America on Switch, PS4, and PS5. What are your thoughts on this game? Like, are you enjoying your time with it?
I'm really, you know, I am enjoying it. I think it's a good game, even though it's not normally the type of game that I would play, which is like the tactical grid-based combat. I found it to be accessible enough for little Huggins come lately, like me. We were just talking about how your first few fights are easy. You can just press A to attack and kind of align yourself on the grid. After the fight, you can press A to scavenge, and you'll be literally eating the dead body parts of whatever you just killed. And your character has gone from being like, ooh, I don't want to eat this corpse, to just pulling eyeballs out of bats like a badass. And she's like, oh, nice. This is going to be really, really good for my monster menu at my base later. But yeah, it's not just you in there after a while. We've had just this one character for a bit, but you'll end up having a party of characters. You can customize them too if you want, like we talked about earlier. Heavy customization options, even for these party members. You're all trying to get out of here together and survive and look good while doing it. Your different party members can have different classes. And as you can imagine, that bakes in a ton more options in this game that's already really, really options and stats and customization heavy, like equipment, moves, combos you're trying to pull off with your party, etc. This is also a road... Excuse me, had to weirdly cough. This is also a roguelite experience. If your leader dies, you will start back at square one with nothing. I don't find this to make the game too crazy hard, actually, but I also played on the lowest difficulty most of the time. So take that with a grain of salt. I do think, based on my experience in this game, I think the roguelite permadeath aspect adds to the game and was a solid choice all around. While I have been known to adore several roguelite games in the past, I don't like games to be like that and have permadeath arbitrarily. That's a major pet peeve for me. But this one, yeah, I do like it overall. I think this is a good game.
Basically, I should keep it.
What'd you say, Brunel? Sorry.
So basically, you're saying I should keep it?
Oh, I forgot you got this game. I think this is cool, and honestly, like, I'm glad that I have this, and because I don't know if I would have picked this out for myself if I wasn't reviewing it, but I think there's a ton of gameplay here. We can go ahead and go into the rating if you'd like.
The game is $49.99 on Switch, PS4, and PS5. What are your thoughts?
So that is a lot of money. I can be a curmudgeon about spending my money. I've only played, probably a little less than 10 hours of the game. But what I can tell, it seems to be very, very, very long with lots and lots of content. And honestly, it seems like it has a decent amount of replayability, too. Feels a bit on the grindy end, but feels like in a fun way because, like we've talked about a couple times already, there's just tons of options everywhere in all directions. I suspect this game will keep you busy for a super long time, even if it didn't have stuff like recipes to tinker with. Idea-wise, this is a fun and unique idea.
Unique.
A really neat take on this. Really neat take on this type of game. I do think the content keeps this one pretty funny and interesting, and weirdly immersive too. It feels like a lot on the line when you're fighting a monster and being like, "Man, I hope I kill this thing so I can like eat its dead corpse and survive one more day." Assets-wise, it's gorgeous for what it is. No disappointment there at all. Feels like a very expensive game. Only me being impressed at how far we've come with not only mildly sexy anime character design type games, but also grid-based exploration in general. Accessibility-wise, while I'm not crazy used to this type of combat system, we've talked about how this can be challenging for me specifically. It's very forgiving for a first-time player, and you can pick between like 4 or 5 difficulties, which you can change at any time, which... you know, we love that. I found this game to be very accessible, even though you could just almost drown in the options here. I think they do a good job of letting you know the possibilities are crazy, but not totally overwhelming you. If you pick a lower difficulty to start out, that isn't going to make you exhaust every option that you got. I picked the lowest one most of the time, no shame. I had a really good time. Would this be a game I would personally pick out if I were shopping around? Maybe not, because I realize this is a combat-heavy game and it's pretty grindy. But I'm really glad I got it for the show. Because I like it more than I thought I would. I am going to play it more. And that just goes to show me for sometimes judging games based on what kind of combat they have and comparing that to games in the past. So I think this wouldn't even be a bad pick for somebody to pick up if they're not typically into this type of game. that makes it a clear cut buy it for me. This game is a bit pricey. I do think it delivers. I think any prospective buyers of the game would be more than satisfied with this one. So if you find yourself in a position where you're watching the trailer or some gameplay somewhere of this game and you're considering buying it, you're like, dang, I hope it has enough content or world to back it up because that does look good. I'd be highly, highly surprised if you didn't end up liking this one. I think it's worth it.
Sweet. Sounds good. All right, next up is After Us, developed by Piccolo Studio, published by Private Division, released May 23rd on Xbox Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $29.99. Explore the corners of a surrealistic post-human world to give life on Earth a second chance in this touching story about sacrifice and hope. Aki, tell us about your time with After Us.
All right, this is a 3D platformer, basically. And you play as some girl. You're never named. You're just Hey You, basically.
Well, the store page says you are Gaia, the spirit of life.
That is incorrect. You are working for Gaia, who
I'm just
calls...
telling you what the store page says.
Yeah. Well, and I'm telling you the store page, which is created by the dev. So it shouldn't be, but they've somehow managed to make it wrong. You are working for Gaia, and Gaia has sent out part of her life force to, she says, to save and protect a bunch of animals, but they're all already fucking desecrated corpses at this point, so not really protecting them. And you need to go out and go recollect her life force, which will give you the animal spirits and her life force and return it to her so she can make the world again. And along the way, you have to avoid pitfalls of humanity sucks. That's the entirety. This is everywhere you go. There's, you know, a bunch of oil slicks that are everywhere that hurt you if you touch it, if they don't outright kill you. There's broken bits of crap that humans had, like broken buildings, halfway demolished and destroyed highways, old rust bucket cars that probably weren't old rust buckets at one point, you know, all this fun stuff. And you just have to go around and find these different spirits. You're basically on a pathway to each and every one of them. You just have to get to them. And along the way, you can find other lesser spirits, which are just other spirits of other animals, like, oh, you might have a kitty cat or a dog or a wolf, bees, you know, whatever. And basically, you're just platforming to get to these lesser spirits and then to find your way to the major one. There are ways to die. Like I said, there are the oil spills that can slowly kill you and ones that shoot out these tentacle things and just pull you in and immediately kill you. There's also occasional items in various levels that will hurt you that actually go after you. Like in one level, there was a bunch of wood cutting saws, like the big circular ones that, you know, that exist in logging and stuff. Those will appear on the floor and go chasing after you. And if they hit you enough, and if those hit you enough times, you die, or there's plastic bags that can attack you.
Oh my god, I'm looking at a screenshot of the circular saws, and that's like a nightmare waiting to happen. My dad's a carpenter, and he's cut himself multiple times on circular saws.
Yeah, my grandpa's lost one of his fingers with a circular saw. So, yeah. There's also, you know, the first level, there's plastic bags that fly at you. They target you like fucking missiles and just go straight for you to kill you. You know, and throughout all of this, you have the ability to call on a breath of life, the only gift you are given by Gaia. And basically, you use it. It takes a little bit to charge up. And then it just creates this giant flower field around you, more or less. And lots of the items that chase after you that can damage you can be destroyed by it. The lesser oil slicks, the ones that just hurt you when you're in it, those will completely disappear as long as it's within that circle. Anything outside of that circle, you have to walk a little closer and then do it again. And yeah, with that you can change a few things in the environment with that. Not a lot. You can find these little sprouts, which are just these little gold things that are plant sprouts of various types of plants. And if you use that ability, they suddenly grow into whatever plant they are, like full grown, and it's really cool, really pretty. Occasionally you come across things that want to kill you, not just things that are targeting you that are inanimate bullshit, but things that are actually actively targeting you because they have brains, and they're called devourers, and they're just people, because people are bad, Mkai. This is all of an environmentalist game. People are bad, Mkai. So you have to kick the shit out of them, which is funny. You do that by basically throwing Gaia's heart, which is the ability she gives you. You throw that into them over and over and over until all the oil has come off of them, and then they fade into dust, which is fun. There is some complexity to the combat, not a lot, but there is some. Because sometimes they'll have like TVs or other pieces of metal or something on their body, and if you throw the heart into that, it's not going to do anything. It's just going to break the heart, and it comes back to you, which takes a little bit for it to reform, so you no longer can attack for, you know, a good 3-4 seconds. So you have to find a way to throw it out, because once you throw it out, it just stays wherever it is until you call it back. So it's basically a boomerang that can just pause in the fucking air. So you have to attack them from behind. And you can do that by either throwing it out and carting them in between you and it and calling it back to you. Or you can knock them over with the Power of Life ability, because not only does it make that circle of grass and flowers and stuff, it also knocks devourers on their ass if they're close enough to you. And then you can wail on them from the side, or run up behind them and wail on them. That's basically the entirety of this game, is humans are bad, kick the shit out of them. Hi.
Have you watched South Park a lot lately? Because you're saying quite a bit.
No, but that's exactly where I got that from. Yes. Yeah. But I haven't watched that in years. It just fits for this to me for some reason. I don't know why. Well, but yeah, that's the game.
It's $30. What are your thoughts?
I'm really for it. I thought it was a fun, cute little game. It's only going to take you maybe a day play. It might take like 10-ish hours. So, you know, I think it's worth the price. And it's a cute little game, so I'm for it, yeah.
Cool. All right, next up, we're going back to Brooks Cooks with Cooks Serve Forever, developed and published by Vertigo Gaming. Released May 15th on Steam Early Access for $29.99. Cooks Serve Forever is a cooking adventure game where you play as Nori Kaga, a home-taught chef with nothing to her name but a food cart and a dream. Manage your menu, learn delicious recipes, and meet a diverse cast of friends and foes on your way to culinary greatness. Brooke, tell us about your time with Cooks Serve Forever.
All right, I also want to say I appreciate that we also have, what is it called later, Miracle Snack Shop, coming from Aki. This is like the cooking anime, high drama, yet very anime craziness episode. I'm really here for it.
My review is going to have a lot of food in it, too.
Oh, fuck yeah, today's cool. Just food day. Now I'm hungry.
I'm all about it, man. That's cool. But yeah, what else is cool? This game. This game is so cool. Like, within a few minutes of playing this, I got that nice tingly feeling where I was like, ooh, I'm lucky I got this game, but also the pressure's on because I want to write it a good review. This game opens up, you're a little kid watching TV, waiting for your mom to come home. The show you're watching has a celebrity chef on it, Chef Rhubarb. She's obviously a pretty big deal. She's got on a beautiful, crazy dress suit, and it lights up. It has all these crazy flashing lights on it, making it look like it glitters. I mean, this is a dress so pretty, it'll make you go, hold up, is this game set in the future? And sure enough, not even just Chef Rhubarb. We're getting some real Hunger Games, rich people vibes here with the clothes of the folks on TV. She signs off. She says her fancy catchphrase, expect nothing less than the best. And the scene kind of pulls out a bit. We can see the whole room now. Your mom is watching you from the doorway. Based on her clothes, she's probably a diner cook or a fry cook at a fast food restaurant. She looks really tired, but really happy to be watching you. As we look around the room more, we can see lots of posters of Chef Rhubarb on the walls of your bedroom, which we're also noticing are like crumbling. This place is like total garbage and not in a kid didn't clean up the room type of way. You're in a huge dump. Like the apartment looks like it's literally falling apart. You look up from the TV and you go, Mom! And she says, good news, you're going to have your favorite dish tonight. And you're like, oh, cool, you're going to cook me the dish. And she's like, close, you're going to cook it. We're going to cook it together. And you're like, cool. And you're probably like 6 or 7 here. And the tutorial begins for making a dish. It's pretty brief. We'll talk more about that in a second. Y'all finish the dish together. You write down in your little kid handwriting how you made the dish together. Your version of the recipe in it is adorable. And you close your little spiral notebook. And on the front of it is a picture of you and your mom having a really great time cooking together tonight. And when we look up from the spiral notebook, it's like 10 years or more later. You're kind of all grown up now. You're still in the very same apartment you grew up in with your mom. You're chilling on the couch. The chef rhubarb posters are still hung up on the walls, but things have gotten a lot older and grimier looking. You've got an old worn out overshirt on, some bicycle shorts, some slippers that look like hamburgers on your feet. You're looking dang good. And someone who could basically give a shit right now. You're on the couch with a beautiful young lady. You got your head in her lap. She's got cool sunflower tattoos on her legs. Is she your friend? Is she your lover? Or are y'all just really cuddly? So far, this game hasn't come out and said for sure, but one thing is for sure, they were roommates. Y'all are very poor, I think.
In a historical sense?
Yes.
Yes!
This is basically a bit for you, Aki, so stay tuned. Y'all are very poor. I think this profession is like she plays guitar on the streets and she brusks. And you rent a food truck and cook for folks in the neighborhood. You do a couple levels. After some warming up, you're back in that same living room as an adult. Still, you're wearing a t-shirt with Chef Rhubarb's face on it. You are absorbed in the show. Chef Rhubarb is saying there's going to be a big competition like there is every 10 years to earn culinary stars, almost like a Michelin star scenario called the Cordero or something. I may be mispronouncing that. I am from Florida. She's talking about how even one of these Michelin type stars is really hard to get, even on the low end. And she's like, do you want to earn a star? Do you dream of earning 2? Do you think you might even make history like I have and be the only other chef to earn 3? Compete in this crazy competition, rich and fame, richness and fame abound. And we're broken out of our TV trance by our absolute smoking roommate who's calling our name over and over. By the way, this game is voiced and has great English voice acting. It's really good. And she's like, Nori, that's your name, by the way. And you're like, what up, Bree? That's her name, LOL. And she's like, yo, this building is getting condemned. We got to move out. But don't worry, I found us a much shittier place to live than this. We're going to be okay. And you're like, wait. And it's like, it's going to be really bad. It's already bad. And you're like, wait, cancel that new lease. I got an idea. I'm going to win this big cooking competition. And we're going to rise up out of this garbage heck hole we live in. And you're going to come work with me in the food truck. And that's the setup of this game. Before we talk gameplay, let's talk vibes and aesthetics, because what kind of horrible e-girl would I be if I didn't care way more about those than the gameplay itself? The vibes are immaculate, and I almost want to say never before seen. This game has a mad style. The world you're playing in, it is my favorite part of this game. It's like the sturdy, grungy, besides music, it's like the sturdy, grungy, yet magical, flashy, dystopian future, urban wonderland. Everything looks amazing and a little scary, and it has a very specific art direction that's hard to describe, but they are just absolutely nailing it. More of an American anime influence. A lot of your customers that come to pick out the food you're making, you know, we're doing a classic thing of like customer hangs out on the left of the screen while we cook a dish for them, cooking game thing. All the customers look dope. They all look like they could be either a grungy non-binary fashion model, or maybe they're like a robot who's covered in ivy and you're like, what is he doing here? Or like, maybe it's a robot that's wearing an insane looking fancy electric ball gown. Or they might be another type of robot that looks like a stand from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. There's a lot going on here. At one point, you know, you just knocked out a level. Maybe you comboed out like 37 times. You just obliterated that service. You did a great job cooking. And your roommate is like, you know, when I see you cook like that, it just makes me love you even more than I did before, says your gorgeous and weirdly flirty roommate. She also is, after a few levels, like, hey, babe, what's up with all these weird robots? And you're like, well, these are delivery people. Most people don't come get their own food anymore. It's rare that we see a customer. And she's like, that's so weird because that delivery robot just walked it over to like a guy a block away. And you're like, no, that's how it is nowadays. So there's like talk of ingredients not being as easy to come by as they used to be.
Fucking yeah!
It's such a colorful, stylish world, but there's also definitely things going wrong. Like the aesthetic here really, add so much in so many different directions because of this. Let's talk about gameplay before I talk about music. Have you ever wanted to
about gameplay, got to give a quick shout out. Vertically Impaired subbed for the 63rd month. That is...
oh my God.
Such a waste of money. I am such so sorry. An
absolute waste. But thank you, Tony. Dude, always good seeing you. Also, to you.
Also, I'm just going to point out before we get back, Bree is super cute.
She's so cute. I love her, and her voice actress is amazing. And she kind of like, I wasn't going to mention this, but she kind of becomes like your little cheerleader, and she provides a lot of the vocalization during levels. So thanks for the cool segue into that, which I have forgotten from my notes. Gameplay. Have you ever wanted to play one of those rhythm games all the kids are playing today, but you don't have any rhythm, like, at all? Has this ever happened
to me? Thing. Yes, yes.
Yeah, so how do I describe this gameplay? I have not seen anything quite like this before. I even had Carrie come over and take a look at it, just in case, like, there's a common game that is doing this. And he was like, huh, that's different. So is it a rhythm game? And I was like, no. It's a game where you do the buttons the screen tells you to do, and the game is like, don't mess it up, and somehow you still mess it up. This description makes it sound, like, super easy. But while this game is heck of accessible, love it. It's harder than it looks. The screen will be like, hey, press A and hold it for a few seconds. Press B 3 times. Press the last button that you pressed, which in this case was B. Now press and hold Y 3 times. Now press any button. And you're looking at this, you know, and it's doing it in, like, the shorthand of showing you on your controller what you need to press, and like, symbols for how long or how many times, or, like, the type of button pressing you're doing. And you're looking at this when it starts out, and you're like, that's it? Is this a game? But it is a game, because then after you talk a bunch of smack, you're like, wow, I can't, like, how could I mess this up? You're like, oh man, I can't even pass level 1, I just totally bombed, what the heck? And at each level, you can pick, like, different little difficulty adders that sort of, like, can give you extra money and stuff if you pull them off. And after a couple of rounds of this, you're like, man, I'm not going to pick anything that makes this game harder. For a while, there isn't rhythm, but there is sort of, like, a timer, but mostly you're just up against yourself. It's deceptively hard to master, almost Simon Says type deal. The story... Oh, I want to go back to music. Hold on, my games are all over the place. Hey, I have COVID. Reminder. Okay. Where did I put my music? Okay, let's talk the music. Why is the music in this cooking game so good? I love this game. This is going to be a top game that I've reviewed out of, like, my fave games, and the music is absolutely my favorite part, and that hasn't been my favorite part of any game previously. And this isn't, like, a music-based game, but... My God, it's so, so good that I find it frustrating this game is in early access, and I can't find the songs I want to listen to on Spotify or anything. Like, I tanked a level early on and then restarted so I could just, like, sit there and Shazam songs to no avail. And I want to just, like, jam several of these songs on repeat for, like, the next few weeks. This music, I think this is a really fun game that didn't need amazing music to make it worth playing. I would have still given this a buy it, but that's what it has. I have to immediately look up who made the music when I started it. It's the same guys that other Cook Serve Delicious games. Apparently, Jonathan Greer. He's based in Austin. What up? That's where I met Chris Taylor here, another amazing musician we have on the show tonight.
Musicians in Austin.
But this, I have never heard of this guy, but I guess he also did Owlboy, Neon Chrome, The Oil Blue, and he did some other cooking games as well.
Nice. I know this guy's.
Yo, it's so good. Like, the soundtrack is just lighting my brain on fire. It's really wonderful. If you cannot tell, I've had a very strong reaction to it. It almost makes the game feel, like, more futuristic in a way. But yeah, this guy's clearly been making music out of Austin for decades. So it would be so disrespectful of me to just come in here and say, yo, this Jonathan Greer guy is going to be the next big thing. But I'm saying it. I'm going to say it. I think this guy's the next big thing. He's so cool. And finally, the story itself. He did the music itself.
For King Oddball.
Oh, wow. Whoa. How did I miss that when I was Google searching this guy? That takes me back.
Nathan Gear.
I have a love-hate relationship with the music in King Oddball, because it's good, but there's so little of it. There's like three songs in the whole game. So, you know, having thoroughly beaten it five different times now.
That's weird. I want to look that up. But yeah, the story is awesome. This is my final note before we go into rating here. If you want a really different cooking game that it just definitely immerses you and makes you feel oddly like you're making a ton of different types of food alongside a really original and compelling fun story and a very, very, very cool, sometimes disturbing, sometimes grimy, sometimes glitzy as dystopian future world Vegas, but always gorgeous. I mean, I can't say enough good things about this, but this isn't a crazy cheap game, so... Excuse me. Ready to go into raiding here if you are, Joe.
All right. Well, it is $30. What are your thoughts on Cook Serve Forever?
You know, I wanted to see how much it was before we got to this. So I was looking it up earlier today. I thought it was interesting. It is $30. There's a 10% discount for owners of Cook Serve Delicious 3 and a 20% discount for owners of the entire Cook Serve Delicious trilogy. Excuse me. So, 1 second. I got some water.
Hang in there, buddy.
My throat is just ripped off. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, in this early access game, it actually only includes roughly the first 25% of the game, but it's got dozens of recipes, variations, over a dozen locations. At this point, I'm just reading off the Steam page to pull us out here. Full cutscenes. I do hear that we're going to have a local co-op mode that's going to drop this summer. It's not here yet, but I'm really excited to try that. So yeah, this game's $30. It is in early access, and we're saying it's only about 25% of the game. I do already adore this game. I think it's really, really special, even if you're not crazy about the gameplay. Of course, mileage may vary there, and you may not know how you feel about it until you're in it. But even not having all of it out yet, I really want these people to be wealthy for their cool ideas and mad style. This is a buy it from me. My plans tonight are to be sick for a while, figure out food to eat IRL, and then my next point on my to-do list is to join the Discord for this game, which the menu of the game links you to. And from there, I'm going to torment everyone in their channel about why is this music so good? Who do I need to pay for a copy of the soundtrack early? Because this whole thing where I play the game endlessly waiting to hear one of my favorite songs, although all the sounds are great, it's not working out for me. Then I'm going to play this game until I pass out. And yeah, it's about time for me to get cracking on that to-do list. So I am going to bid you, gentle folk, adieu, and I'll see you not next week, but the week after for a tearful reunion after a horrible long 2 weeks apart, and some Jack Sean.
Nice.
Well, I will say, since you're bouncing beforehand, when this comes out, check out the review for the last game I'm doing, I think it is.
Dice Legacy or Vivid Loaf?
The former.
Dice Legacy. I will, because I already have to revisit this to hear about Miracle Snack Shop, which I already wanted to see, and now apparently have to listen to Zool, which may or may not have some anime cooking goodness. No, I'm gonna. So make it good. Make it good, Chris.
No, please, don't listen to it.
And anyone makes Zool good, come on.
Hey.
Thank you for bearing with me while I'm sick. I really wanted to come on here tonight and talk about these games, because I had a really good time with them. So thanks for bearing with me.
Cool. And just for you, Brooke, in the scheduling and planning Discord, there's a link to the soundtrack on Bandcamp.
Oh my God. Dreams come true and miracles happen every day on the SML podcast. I'm going to cry, you guys. I'm going to go visit that right now. Thank you so much. I hope you guys have an awesome night. I'll talk to you soon.
You too.
Take care, Brooke. Oh, man. All right. We got to move on. Next game to talk about is Bat Boy, developed by X Plus Company and Sanzai Games, published by X Plus. Released May 25th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $14.99. Ryosuke isn't just your regular high school kid. He and his fellow sports star friends secretly battle against evil invading forces of Lord Vicious, hell-bent on hosting sinister athletic events for his own amusement. You are Bat Boy. Pernell, you are Bat Boy.
And soon, many other people will be Bat Boy when they purchase this game, probably at a full price. I don't know, whatever your discount, whatever you want to spend on it. The point is, Bat Boy is good. Bat Boy is essentially another one of those like platformers that was designed to kind of, you know, reflect off of like nostalgia for the 8-bit era with a tint of Mega Man, as in you beat a boss and get their power. But given a dose of sports phenomena in the sense of you being a player who is a member of a team of sports-themed heroes who are transported to a weird world, your character's fine, everybody else gets brainwashed and lose their crap, and now you, as Bat Boy, have to rescue your teammates / friends from this plight. And this is done by going across a variety of different stages with interesting themes, I will say. Some are traditional, but that doesn't mean they're not fun, because they're actually pretty damn fun. themed levels to reach the end, defeat your friends, knock the brainwashing out of them, and then I'll talk about what happens in a second after that. So as you explore these levels, you have a default moveset, typically. As Bat-Boy, you can jump. You can wield your bat in the form of swinging it and hitting enemies and knocking them out. You can send the enemies that you hit kind of long flying forward. If they barrel over enemies, you can get like a source of combo items, a combo effect to get, you know, more money or currency to spend on things, which I'll talk about later. And you start to learn other things as you play the game, because each time you beat a boss, whether it's an enemy boss or a friend, they will in turn teach you a new skill, which will become part of your repertoire. For example, one of the characters in the game is a huge fan of ribbon dancing. And if you defeat her, you gain a ribbon, essentially a ribbon grappling hook. So you can use the ribbon to grapple onto objects and yank yourself up. And as a result, now all of a sudden your ability to traverse levels expands quite a bit. And one thing I like about this game is that for the most part, every ability you get is more so meant to be used to explore and expand where you can go than it is to attack enemies, though some of them do have dual effects of hurting enemies for doing a decent amount of damage. So you'll go around, defeat your friends, or rather unbrainwash them, and then get their abilities to expand on your abilities. As you're exploring these levels, there's also a few secrets you're trying to obtain, primarily in the form of seeds, or seeds. So there's a red one, a yellow one, a green one, and a gold one. No, a red one, a green one, and a gold one. And the red and the green are pretty much hidden in various areas of the stage, but the gold one is not only hidden in the level, but then once you find it, it is being held by an NPC that you have to pay currency that you acquire through the stages to pick it up from him. And aside from that, the other pickups in the levels that you can find are like treasure chests that hold more money for you, or treasure chests that hold hit point healing items, or actually your ability healing items, so you can do more of your abilities. And what you do with these seeds is on the world map, because there is a world map, you can go to a variety of stores run by NPCs, and you can use the seeds along with some currency to purchase tonics that can either give you more hit points or give you more skill points, so you can use more of your abilities in a row before needing to recharge them. The music is top freaking notch. Shouldn't be a surprise to anybody familiar with Evader, though, because that guy, I feel like whenever his name is on a game, as far as being the composer of it, it's an instant pickup for me, sight unseen. If I didn't get a review copy for this game, I was going to just buy it because of his music's in it. And thankfully, I got it for free. Evader?
Evader.
I'm trying to remember his full name. It's like Damien something, but his pen handle is Evader, and I've liked every OST he's ever done. Nice. He's primarily with Sanzai Games, but I wouldn't be. I'm pretty sure he's probably done like one or two outside of theirs too. But I know him mainly from Sanzai stuff. Well, Sanzai and Smelter. He did Smelter as well. So this game is honestly a good time. It's not. I don't feel comfortable talking about the difficulty because I just kind of thrive on that sort of thing. So what I say isn't too difficult might not be someone else's, but you know, well, who the heck? The game's not all that hard. It's very generous in the fact that when you die, you get kicked back to a checkpoint. It gives you a notification of strike, like strike one, strike two, strike three. And I was thinking that if I got to strike four, I'd be out, but no. You can go up to, like, strike 10. The game just keeps counting, which makes me wonder, like, is it going to penalize you when you complete the entire game with, like, 35 strikes? Like, wow, that was a terrible baseball game, Bat-Boy. You're fired. I don't know. But what I do know is that, the game is very fair as far as you traversing levels and trying again after dying. The areas where you get to specifically use the special abilities to their fullest, I enjoy those quite a bit. They're generally used for like mini levels within the world map or for access secret areas in the stages. You know, because of course, before you get to those levels proper, if the ability is possibly unable to be held there, they can't make the level built around that ability. But when they know for a fact that you likely have that ability, they throw it in the mix to the point where you know you have to use it to traverse the stage. Honestly, those are probably the best parts of the game when they actually know that you got stuff and they make you use it to the fullest extent. But I am rambling here, quite frankly. But in the end, I just want to say that I feel like the controls are tight, the gameplay is solid, the music is good, the challenge is just right. I can't think of a reason why you'd go wrong on this game unless you want a game that's going to last you 30 hours, because this ain't it. But if you want a game that will last you maybe like 5 hours or so, I think you got a good time coming at you with Bat Boy. This is worth your money and worth your time if you like classic 2D platformers.
Nice. Well, it is $15. Your official verdict on this one?
An easy buy. Not have to think about it. Just pick it up. It's good.
Cool. All right. Next up, Zool Redimension.
Wait, I forgot. I should have said, it's a home run. There you go.
I'm just staring at the camera right for now.
I had to do it. Sam.
Just shaking my head in disappointment. You can't see it, so I have to give you the play-by-play. But,
yeah. Getting on the act.
All right, next up is Zool Redimension, developed by Sumo Digital Academy, published by Secret Mode, released May 16th on PS4 for $9.99, originally released by Gremlin Graphics in 1992 on the Amiga to critical acclaim. Iconic gaming mascot Zool returns in Zool Redimension. Help Zool jump, spin, and shoot his way across 8 alien worlds, taking down menacing bosses and saving the universe from the nefarious influence of Krul. Chris, you're Zool going after Krul. Is it cool?
I should. Thank you.
Hey, you better add those crickets.
So, yes, Zool Redimensioned. So, yeah, I definitely jumped on this game because, Zool's kind of, in the past been a little bit of a, target of playful scorn, let's call it, by me and other, quote unquote bad game appreciators. You know, people who play Bubsy for fun. But like Bubsy, I've been a little bit surprised by Zool in the latter day. But, so basically, Zool is a game that came out in the, right at the first lap of Sonic running circles around all the other, you know, animal mascot kind of games, you know? Like, and Zool's not really, he's kind of a gremlin. I don't know that he's really an animal, but I mean, the Amiga version, of course, kind of stayed in Europe, where I suppose it was critically acclaimed. I think it made a best of list and stuff, so yeah, it's pretty well liked over there. But the versions we got were on the Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis, and Game Gear. And Zool was forced to compete with the likes of, you know, Awesome Possum and, like, you know, I don't know, Chester Cheetah. Like, just all the mascots that you can possibly have in a platform game where you have to collect stuff and get to the end of the level. The reason why Zool kind of stuck out is because, for one, he was the ninja of the nth dimension, and that was, like, supposed to be kind of cool. You know, he's a ninja with green ears, and that looks kind of cool. And then you play the game, and the first level is an ice level, which, is just bold. That's a bold move to make in a platform game. And, like, that's one of the things that me and my friends used to make fun of. The other thing is that it's not really a snow. It acted like an ice level, but what it really was is a dessert level where it's just candy, like, all over the place. So it's like, you're this badass ninja, and the very first 4 stages of the game, because it's actually 7 worlds divided up into 4 stages in and of themselves. So, games like this and Booger Man and Earthworm Jim are, like, examples of this, is where, like, you know, a stage kind of repeats itself, and that can really turn off a young gamer. But, you know, as a way to kind of, it was a way to make the levels more bite-sized and to get more content out of less backdrops. But, like, yeah, it was rough when you get to, like, level 1-4 and it's still the same background. You've been at it all weekend. So, you know, this was that kind of game. And, like I said, you know, it was people derided old Zool for, you know, like I said, being a ninja in a Candyland setting that's also an ice level, and with inexplicably like hard hitting techno music as the thing, because that's actually a kind of a trope of Amiga games, but we didn't see that as much on the SNES and Genesis. We saw it sometimes when other games would get ported, but anyway. So yeah, that's the curiosity of Zool. It was known for being an extremely hard game, so a lot of people don't know that, like, all the levels have these, like, wacky themes, and they get really cool. Like, eventually they actually get really interesting, and so that's kind of cool for Zool. So what this game is actually, I'm not going to say unique, but certainly one that I have not come across yet myself. This is a remake that was made by a school, a Zool school, if you will. See, we're just going to keep going with this rhyming thing. So Sumo Digital Academy, I read into them, and it's really interesting. It's a bunch of, like, young interns, essentially, at a software company who... Basically, it's like an alternative path into the games industry is how they quote it. So it's these people who have never coded before, suddenly being handed a game from the old school, being, like, advised on it by the actual original creators. So the original creators did have a hand in this. And they retooled this Zool to be basically a modern platformer with all the modern accoutrements. And repackaged and sent out. So, like, this is a really interesting thing. Like, this game was basically made by essentially kids with, like, not much coding experience and things like that. And here's the other thing. The remake kind of rules. You know, nice. Rules the Zool. anyways. So, Redimensioned is not a reimagining, but basically it's a version of Zool that kind of fixes everything that was kind of wrong with it to begin with. So one of them actually confirms a theory I posited just last week on my own stream, where I was just painfully, like, making my way through Donkey Kong Country 3, because it's part of the Nintendo Power Top 100 that I'm playing through. And, the thing I said almost near the end of the game, I was like, you know what? If somebody took this game and widened out the screen and shrunk the sprite, the main character sprite, and, like, made it more like Mario-sized, this game would be so much better. Because I hate these giant-ass sprites running around this tiny-ass world where the camera is just, like, jerking around to try and keep up with it, right? And that's the thing that... That's a thing that Zool also had. It's very common in British game making back in that day. Redimensioned actually did that. They took the game of Zool and they widened it out where much more of the screen, and therefore enemies and power-ups and you know, all the stuff that you would be grabbing, is now actually in a like size and shape that makes sense. Like, it actually, you can platform through this and see what's coming and what's behind you and what's just out of sight. And even though it does still have the jerky camera, you can change that. Yeah, now you can actually put it to a centering position where it kind of does its best to follow the ninja himself, instead of just kind of, you know, when you hit a certain part of the screen, the whole thing kind of jerks to keep up with you. Like, you can actually change that, and that's amazing. They also, they added save slots as well as stage select if you've already beaten a stage, which is really great. It actually auto-saves, so that's really cool. The other thing is that they added in all of the... They added in a double jump built in, because Zool, weirdly, did not have a double jump. You'd think it should have, but he did have the wall-clinging stuff. And, Zool also had a gun, kind of like Mega Man. It's just like a little pea shooter that he could take out enemies with. And this game introduces an auto-fire option, which is great. And then, just in case you find these old-ass Amiga games too hard, they just straight-up give you an invincibility option, and they give you an endless jumping option, so you can just... you can just infinity-jump your way through the level if you so desire.
Wow.
Toggling these assists, of course, will cause the cause the game to not give you any trophies, but, you know, I don't care about that. But I also don't usually, like, use cheats in these kind of games, but it even has a contrast setting where you can jack the contrast to extra and, like, have it look like just this kind of oversaturated, well, like an old PC game. But it actually helps you in identifying enemies and, like, seeing the shots and stuff like that. Just so many ways of, like, of kind of, you know, fixing a game that did kind of need some fixing and maybe overfixing it. So if you didn't like the overfixing, you can play it in Ultimate Ninja mode, which is just the original game. It's more like the port of the Genesis version than the Amiga version, but I haven't played the Amiga version to really tell for sure. But I have played the Genesis version, and this is very much like it. You can still turn on all the same assists. It's just now you got that that camera, you know, really pulled in on Zool, and it's kind of jerking around and stuff. You know, it's and it's got all of the old school difficulty, you know, reassigned. So that's there for you. Also, in addition, is 4 mini games that require more than one player. So I didn't play them. But you got Zool's Gold, you know, how like Fool's Gold, Rule of Zool. Ball Brawl, and then Shuffle. I don't know.
I hate my life, just so you know.
Yeah, that's fine. So yeah, like, they really did a lot with this Zool Redimensioned, and I dare say, like, the Redimensioned is, like, an actual game that I actually really want to play. Like, I would like to see this through to its completion and fight the, you know, the huge bosses, such as a flying V guitar that actually flies and a banana with a dog collar. These are things that exist in this game, and I invite you all to play this game and go find them, because this game gets ridiculous after the level that's straight up just candy. Which, by the way, fun fact, the reason why the first stage is all just candy, it's because they had an endorsement from Chupa Chups lollipops. So they featured... Yeah, that's really true. The original game featured lots of branding, and the Japanese version included even more branding, including Yamaha and, like, the high-end fruit company. I forget their name.
Wow.
They took all that out of the U.S. version, and it's not present in this version either, but that's just a fun fact for you, is that a lollipop company helped fund this game originally.
Interesting. Well, it's $10. What do you think?
I mean, you should buy this game for $10 just from me talking this much about it, honestly. If a remake of a platformer that you know has been a schoolyard kind of, you know, like I said, a point of derision in the olden days, if you've ever wanted to give a platformer a second chance, this is definitely one to do. I definitely endorse this one. It's got my buy it of approval, and it is the only game I'm seeing from Sumo right now, according to their website. So I'm hoping that they actually maybe handle some more stuff with this level of care. I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do.
I know it's not and the also, first from Sumo. It's the first from their academy.
That's what I meant.
Yeah. Sumo Digital's done a lot.
I also hope that we see this on Switch as well, because I'll pony up the $10 if they put it on Switch.
Nice. Hey, Joe, what's the longest review on the episode? Fucking Zool.
Well, what can I say? I had a lot to say. It's my only game.
Gotta make up for it, right?
Yeah. Tune in next week when all my reviews are less than 3 minutes.
Oh, God, speedrun.
That's our buddy.
All right, well, next game to talk about is Vivid Lope, developed and published by Jacob, released May 19th on Steam for $9.99. Vivid Lope is the head-spinning, mind-bending arcade game with a puzzle touch. Master the imaginative realm where the gravity doesn't quite work as you're used to. Overcome your foes and keep on painting. Purnell, what's going on in this one?
What's going on in this game is the exact replica, or not replica, but the exact vibe that you would get from a classic early PS2 era video game. It made me very glad to stumble across this game, because I actually purchased it before the code came, so I refunded it to get the review, because I was already on board. This game, it hits all the right notes for me. You are a rabbit. Oh, I'm getting there, sir. I am getting there. You are a rabbit, and you are looking for your friend in this very strange world that is composed of geometric patterns made into walkable stages. The goal of the levels, if you're familiar with classic games such as Crush Roller or then you already are on board with the idea, but they want you to fill in all the tiles on the stage with the associated color. So think of like a square. Square has 12 tinier squares inside of it, and you can walk across them. Each time you step on one of the squares, it will change to a color. You change all the color, the squares to the proper note color, level's over. Sounds simple, right? Well, it is freaking not, because the way the game works is that you get points, or rather combos, based on how many times, how long you can walk across rectum cubes or squares without retraversing one you've already stepped on. So you'll be trying to walk pathways that are not reusing previous spaces. In addition to that, enemies are popping up all over the place, giving you a bit of a bother or problem. So unless you pick up an item that will occasionally appear within the level that will allow you to do different ways to attack them, such as swinging a hammer or kind of ground pound them, you kind of have to avoid them. But if they're in the middle of the pathway you're trying to traverse to keep your combo going, well, that can be a bit of a bother. Also, if you stop walking, you have a combo meter which is building up as you do this. And if you stop walking, the combo meter will start to go down, which will in turn also negatively impact your score. So even though you don't have to keep walking constantly, they kind of incentivize you to do so. Keep a momentum going, keep hitting new squares, don't get hit. You are able to jump, however. If you want to press the jump button, you can hold it down and aim the direction. You can jump across one square, and you can jump in any of 8 directions. So that's pretty good for you to have access to kind of get a little bit of more maneuverability going. So as you're walking and your combo meter goes up, once you hit certain thresholds, you'll be able to walk faster. So you'll be able to cover the level quicker even. And once you hit a certain percentage of the level being cleared, the game will then say, okay, you're officially in bonus mode. And when bonus mode happens, enemies no longer appear, and you are no longer penalized for walking further, per se. Like, if you don't walk quickly enough, the game won't penalize you anymore. However, at this point, now you're tasked with filling in the remaining squares on the stage to get a 100% level clear. And every time you step on a square that you've already touched, your combo meter that you've built up will go down, with no way to replenish it. So if you don't finish the level before running out of juice, you won't get the full bonus for completing the stage. You'll still beat the level at this point, you just won't get the full bonus. So it's incentivizing you to clear the level in such a way that when you hit bonus time, you are able to access the squares you did not touch. Now, the funny thing is that what I just described, you might think that sounds complicated, but that's actually pretty straightforward. But I also described the levels as being just like a rectangle, when the actual game is anything freaking but. You get some crazy geometric shapes going on in this thing. You're walking in full loop-de-loops. You got squares that you can walk around all the sides of. You have levels where you walk around a loop and then jump off the back end, and gravity brings you back down to the other side of the loop, so you got to walk under it now. Like, there is a lot of cool stuff going on in this game to mess with your head and to intentionally kind of get you wondering, how the hell am I supposed to clear this level given the spaces that I have available to me and the path I kind of got forced to take because enemies are being complete bastards. But I also love it. I love the puzzle that this game presents to me. I love the frustration I get every time I think I got a perfect combo going and an enemy kills me. And rather than just taking a death in my life and starting over, I restart the whole damn stage because I want the V score, which is the maximum score that you can get on a level is V rank. Vivid Loop, get it? So I am very much obsessed with this game. And the game does get more complicated as you go. They keep adding new elements like switches that result in an entire section of the level just like flipping up from below to out of nowhere. So now you have to remember that that's there and get back to it after you hit the switch, but leave a path for yourself to cover. Otherwise, you're going to break your combo. Also, I should mention that you do get access to like things you can purchase that will hopefully make the game easier for you if you find yourself getting a little stuck. You can get gems by completing stages, and then you can spend them at an NPC to give you items that will increase your ability to do different things, which will make the game a little easier for you to progress. Of course, being that this game has a ranking system, if you use items in the stage, kind of like Mega Man Zero, you are unable to get the highest ranking for that stage, which is a fine concession for just progressing through the game. If you just want to see what's there to offer, that's so be it. Use items, clear stages, and move on. But if you get obsessed with that ranking system, ultimately, you got to ditch the items and go for broke. That's just how it's going to be. But as it stands, this game is a lot of fun. The music is also pretty freaking choice, too. Again, it feels so much like a game that would have been perfectly at home on the PlayStation 2 alongside games like The Adventures of Cookie and Cream. And I say that with a very high esteem because I love The Adventures of Cookie and Cream. Or see, the earlier Klonoa games, too.
I see one of the reviews on Steam just says, good Dreamcast game.
Yep, I can see that being a valued aspect of it, too. Because, like, that whole era, you know, like those kind of cutesy platformers, Dreamcast had them, PS2 had them. It was just, I loved them.
Or no, who is your friend that found us on Spotify? Because he said he had a message for Aki. Let me see if I could pull it up here.
Oh, God, this is probably not good.
Let me
scroll Dreamcast. And find here.
God, I'm getting cussed out today. Okay, let's do this.
You badmouth the Dreamcast, Aki.
I'm looking for it. I'm trying to find it. Where the hell is it? I had it earlier. Here it
is. I don't even remember seeing
it. Let Aki know if she ever slanders the name of the Sega Dreamcast again. I'm sending Sagata Sanshiro's ghost to her house.
Sagata Sanshiro. Sagata Sanshiro. I'm like the one person in this podcast that knows who the hell that is.
Yep.
Not a fight.
That joke was just for you, Pernell, I guess.
I'm on board. Shoot, because Sagata Sanshiro is the shit.
I love Sagata Sanshiro. Have you seen the new commercial with his son?
There's a new one?
Yeah.
I have to look this up because I don't recognize the name.
Sagata Sanshiro. Sagata.
I bought Project X. What was it called? That Capcom thing? Or that Project Sega
Cross
thing.
Zone.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, he's in that as a character, isn't he?
He is in the second one, yes.
Probably one of the best game mascots to ever exist.
I recognize this guy.
I love him.
Sega Sanshiro.
I was posting GIFs of that guy back in the LiveJournal days.
Oh, yeah, I don't think I knew of him that long ago. Death Battle. Did a thing of him versus, I believe, Chuck Norris or something.
Oh, Lord.
That's where I learned about
his ass.
Yeah, anyway. I'm pretty sure they both got like a one win each or something.
God. Well, anyway, we got to move on. Next game to talk about is Miracle Snack Shop, developed by Tail Shop, published by CFK, released May 26th on Xbox Series X and S and Windows 10 for $19.99. Enjoy the sweet love story with two lovely and charismatic heroines. The beautiful artwork and fully voiced lines give you a taste of every bit of their charms. Aki, what is going on in Miracle Snack Shop?
Okay, you are a fucking loser who is poor as shit because you're stupid, and you now own a little snack shop, and because you're so useless at everything... the shop you've turned into just making ice treats, basically. That's it. That's all you can make because you're stupid and useless and a waste of space. And somehow there is a portal in just one of your windows. I don't know. And one day a woman comes flying out of it. And because you're you... Not only does she not run into you, you step out of the way so she doesn't run into you. Because apparently you can't even deal with people touching you. And it turns out she's from a world called Salt, and she is the queen. And, well, you decide, hey, your stomach's growling, so why don't you eat ice? Because that's all I can do, because I'm useless. And, yeah, so... she starts coming on a regular basis to eat your snacks, your ice snacks. And you get a little visual novel thing with her. And eventually, after enough time of interacting with her, another girl shows up, a YouTuber who very pretty, but way too peppy and happy and annoying as shit, shows up and decides to be like, well, your shop kind of sucks and no one's here, so I'm going to help promote it because, I don't know, guess pity? I don't know.
What kind of game is this? Because you're kind of just telling the story,
it's a visual novel.
Oh, then so, why are you telling us the whole story? We're supposed to read
it. I'm not. Oh, what am I supposed to say? You own a snack shop. It's a visual novel. The end. No, I have to give a little basis. It's basically whichever girl you decide to go after is really what it ends up being. This is more on the... It's a dating sim slash visual novel, but it's very light on the dating sim. And if you're like, what's the difference? The difference is in dating sims, you usually have to worry about statistics, like what's your charisma, what's your strength, what's your intelligence, so you can make money to give girls presents, because everything's very transactional in those games. This is kind of like that. You're actually managing your shop. And with that, you know, some of the money you make goes to learn more recipes, which will raise up your skill level so your recipes don't suck as bad, so you can make more money. And then you can also buy things like promotions to raise your fame level, so again, you can make money. So you're not really dealing with stats, you're just dealing with being less of a loser. And with that, you can feed them new snacks, basically. Again, all made out of ice, because again, you're a loser. Or taking them on dates, which just raises their affection for you, more or less. And that's basically the entirety of the game.
Cool. That's $20. What do you think of it?
I'm for it. I really liked the background, especially of the queen. She was really fun. I probably would have liked the YouTuber more if the voice wasn't so peppy and therefore extremely grating for me. She's like one of those super ultra hyper bubbly people, and I can't stand that.
Shocker.
Yeah.
Happy people disgust me.
Pretty much fucking annoying happy motherfuckers. but both their voices are very lovely. It can switch between Korean, which is the primary language you are working in Korea, and they also have a language pack B. They don't tell you what either language actually is, but language pack B is Japanese. So you can switch between those as you see fit. This is made to be played multiple times through. You can speed through it really quickly just by holding the right bumper to just bypass everything. And I mean everything. It doesnn't have an option where it's like, bypass everything I've already read. No, it's just bypass it. It's a nice quick game you can get through. There's plenty of, CGs to look at. There's a bunch of different scenes. You can see the backstory about these characters and yada yada. It's nice. I really enjoyed it. So I'm all for it.
Cool. And one thing to keep in mind, this is not on Xbox One. It is just on Series X and S and PC. So keep that in mind if you are browsing the store.
Yes.
I was kind of surprised it wasn't on Xbox One. Is there anything in the game that, like...
No.
Oh, I didn't think so.
I wouldn't be shocked if this eventually comes to the Xbox One, to be quite honest, because this is just like every other visual novel I've ever played. I wouldn't be shocked if this could be played on, like, a Windows XP computer. this should be playable on the Xbox One, so I wouldn't be shocked if they eventually bring it.
All right, well, we got one last game to talk about tonight. That is called Dice Legacy Definitive Edition, developed by Destiny Bit and Amplifier Game Invest. Released May 26th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, and PS5 for $19.99. I'm sorry, I just lost my spot. Yay! Dice Legacy is a dice-based survival city builder set on a mysterious ring world. Your ship has reached the shore of an uncharted continent. Roll and use your dice to gather resources, expand and defend your settlement, survive the winter, and interact with the strange inhabitants of this eerie world. For now, please tell me what is going on in Dice Legacy Definitive Edition, because I tried playing it for like 2 hours and I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
What this game is to me, and I'm saying this as a guy who also is currently staring at his screen, not really advancing it because he may not survive the current winter he's on. But that's fine because that's the nature of the beast. You fail and try again and get better until you succeed. But for folks who know board games, this is essentially a rendition of a dice placement, worker placement style game where you are on a very interesting concept of a circular world, a world where you land, and as you move further into it to explore it, it kind of goes up and around an infinite oval. And what ends up happening here is you have to build a settlement and explore this new land and pretty much resolve a series of goals, with the ultimate thing being to, it mostly is based on the mode you're playing at the time, but for the most part, on the main scenario, you're just like, you're exploring it and discovering what lands, what's out there in this world that you landed on. And the way this works is you have to do a typical city building game, so I guess it's also a city builder in addition to worker placement. You have to build facilities that are meant to further allow your civilization to prosper and thrive, but also grow and expand and explore. How do you do this, you ask? Well, you have dice, and these dice are meant to represent your actual citizens. You start out with about five. If you start as the main game, you start as the king, you have five dice that are representative of peasants. And the sides of the die face can have one, two, three, four, five symbols, and depending on what you roll, that determines what the die is able to do. Say, for example, if there's forest tiles on the board, you need to roll an emblem that looks like an axe and a pickaxe. That implies that you can use that die to either work in the woods to generate wood, or work in the mines to generate steel or iron or stone. So you can place that die, and over a period of time, he'll generate resources for you and then come back to you. If you don't like what the die face shows, let's say you need to have a hammer so you can build a new facility that you want to construct, you can roll the dice again until you get what you want. However, if there weren't a penalty to that, well, that would be stupid, wouldn't it? So what they decided to do was provide each die with durability. So let's say a die has 16 durability. That means you can roll this die 16 times before it shatters. In other words, your citizen dies. So don't let that happen. You roll the die, you use it on the space, it goes through a series of time, and when the time expires, the die comes back, you get the generated resources, and you have to roll it again. So don't put a die with a durability of 1 on a location, because you're basically sentencing that citizen to death. The way you get citizens restored, of course, is by sending them to a facility you can build called a cookhouse. You send them there along with some food you've generated from one of the other spaces, and you can resurrect that die, restore its durability, and it can get back to working. Sounds simple. It is freaking not, because this game has a tree on top of tech trees that you will have to fail at in order to get better with it. In addition to the tech tree, which, to expand on that, it allows you to build new facilities and resources that can help you survive longer. So, give you a quick example. Early on, you can hunt for food. Send a worker with the earlier icon I mentioned, the axe and pickaxe icon, and you can hunt on these spaces and generate food. But eventually, you might find yourself in a situation where you can't utilize those spacing moments because they run out over time. They eventually get maxed out or taxed and they go away. So instead, you can then produce wheat farms, then send workers to the wheat farms to generate the wheat, and then have a wheat mill to process that into grain so you can actually eat with it, generating food resources. Again, optimizing your stuff and getting things happening. There's even additional dice types you can generate, which will result in different die faces. And you can use those to do other things like expand the actual tech tree. Technology is not just facility building and such. So you can get better goods and basically do better at what you do. There's things we can like merchant dice. There's monk dice. There's soldier dice. There's a lot of freaking dice in this game. And you need all of them in different circumstances to handle scenarios, such as you come across a new settlement. You have to make up an established connection with the settlement. But are they hostile? You got to figure that out. Are they friendly? You want to start a trading with them? Well, you need to get some merchandise out there to start up a trading route with this township. It's freaking deep. And I didn't even get to the part that's going to get you killed. The part that I'm staring at right now, knowing that when I try to start doing more stuff, I might not make it, which is winter. Over time, the game goes through the seasons of summer and winter, basically two halves of the scheduling. When winter comes, all of a sudden, the dice that you have working are suffering from certain conditions. You can't actually farm wheat anymore because all the wheat farms stop producing. Dice that work outside of the range of a steam generator could potentially freeze while working. And if they freeze, the only way you can get them back is by having a monastery to heal them, which is not easy to get access to earlier in the game for sure. Or a tavern where you can use beer that you produce from your wheat fields to heal them and get them back warm and ready to work. Of course, the fact that wheat can't be generated in the winter means you have to prepare in advance to have ale at the ready for potentially frozen workers, or just get really freaking good at producing steam generators. I did not, but I will, because I'm going to keep playing this damn game. You can do a stupid amount. There's even something called Ascension Dice, which I didn't even get around to, because the way it works to get that is you have to access an object called the Obelisk, which is in the level 3 tech tree for a specific area of the tech trees. And once you've done that, you can produce special dice that are more powerful than normal dice. And if you don't exhaust it, you can use it in a future play session. So it basically gives yourself a nice leg up when you start another attempt at playing through the game. And there's a lot of content here that I never even got a chance to access. I'm going to just be blunt because it is a big game. You can access different modes where you have different goals in mind. You can get different starting characters. And the starting characters start with different combinations of dice. They each have their own quote-unquote gamble ability. Think of like Yahtzee, where you roll 6 dice in a specific combination. You can activate a special ability for that character. For example, I have a person where if you roll the 6 combination of dice, you can activate the ability to unfreeze all your dice. Good luck doing that when all my dice are already freaking frozen. I don't have enough dice to re-roll. I didn't stock up one beer, so my people are freezing their balls off. Oh, mercy. It's funny, too, because I bought this game originally back on Switch when it came out because, again, I'm a huge board game guy, and I like stuff like this, but never got around to starting it. And I almost didn't want to review this because I was like, I already own it on Switch. I just haven't had time for it. But now, I'm actually kind of glad I did because I want to talk to people about it and let them know this is a solid product. If you like, this to me is the sort of thing that board games should be digitally. The sort of thing, because if you made this game on a tabletop, you'd have to have so much cardboard just getting thrown out across a freaking row of tables to keep the board expanding indefinitely, and cleanup would be a bitch. this is the perfect example of board game mechanics being implemented in a video game in a way that if you tried to do it on a table, it would be stupid. Like, it wouldn't make any sense to bother. But in this format, it's freaking great. I only wish it had a multiplayer, because I feel like this would be an interesting game to have a competitive aspect to. Like, how would you go head-to-head in a game like this? Like, maybe reach a certain settlement within a certain number of turns, but you can send enemies to attack the other person's civilization. I don't even know. But it would be interesting to see this in a versus mechanic. But as it is, this is a fantastic video game / board game hybrid. And I don't know how much attention it's been getting, but it deserves more of it. Because this is quality stuff. In a world where people are just taking board games and just saying, now it's just digital. This is someone that said, we want to make a game that is for the video game medium specifically, but with board game mechanics. And it works extremely well. I am happy with this game. Will I ever beat it? Who the fuck knows? Doesn't matter. I still think it's a great game. It's a puzzle worth enduring. Something I should note, though, before I let this ride out. I remember reading about back when I first bought it on Switch that one of the complaints people had was that it was in real time, as in you don't get to think through your moves. Or you do, but the clock doesn't stop while you try, which can cause a little bit of anxiety in people that need to plan their moves out. But it's worth noting that I'm not sure if it got passed into every version. I'm going to wager it did. But in this game, there's now a option to have this actually specifically called tabletop mode, where you are able to roll your dice and plan out where you want them to go while stopping the clock. So you don't have to feel stressed and pressured about choosing where they're going to go. And don't worry, you're going to fail anyway until you get the knack. But you don't have to fail under duress of time. You can fail because you're still learning the game and getting a strategy modeled out. So that, to me, makes this game much more awesome. I like being able to plan my moves out and make decisions. So, yeah, this is a winner.
Cool. Well, the game's $20. What is your verdict?
Easy recommendation. This is a good game. It's a very good game.
Cool. Good episode. Good games.
Absolutely. Good I think I'm just getting better at being able to go, okay, my time is limited. I got to choose games that I know will be interesting to me, or at least I'll take a shot on.
You sent me a list of a dozen games you want.
You're damn right. Like, just worth noting on here, when people sometimes like, why does no one ever review bad games? Because in a world where there's like a jillion coming out all the time, you could at least do due diligence to be like, hey, I'm going to try games that I would like to hope I like, because I'm spending time on this.
Damn,
which also means if you play a game that sucks, oh, you're going to know it. Because this game sucked. So that's how that works. If you ever wonder why we always have so many good reviews, though there will be some bad ones here and there, it's because time is precious and we don't want to play bad games if we can help it. So thankfully, we've had a lucky streak.
Most of these people are fucking ancient too, so they don't have a lot of time left.
Yeah.
My precious antique back.
There's a certain amount of projecting.
Projecting. Absolutely that.
Anyway. Wasn't a word I would have chosen, but go right ahead.
It's a great word.
It's literally projecting. What are you talking about? It's rejecting it before you try it because you don't expect to like it. Projecting.
Yeah.
Excellent. Short.
Anyway, that's it for this episode. We made it through another one. Thanks to you three for being here, hanging out. Big thanks to Brooke for coming on, doing her thing, even though she had COVID. Hopefully she gets better soon, and we'll see her in 2 weeks. Big thanks to Sam Brace for coming on for the interview earlier in the show. Really fun chat. We're going to listen to a couple more of his songs. So listen to them and then go buy it on Bandcamp or something. Go check it out. It's really good stuff. Anyone have any final words to end the show?
Feels good to be done before midnight.
It does.
Really freaking does.
That's what happens when you start an hour earlier than usual.
Hey, there you go. Want to keep that in mind in the future. Dun, dun, dun. It shows like precedent set. What if I need more time? I need more time.
I'm just letting you ramble. I'm just letting it happen.
It's
his way of projecting your idea.
Damn it!
Surely modern life has given us unfair.